The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Welcome to Posh Across the Pond, a Peterborough United podcast presented by the Yellow Block. I'm your host, Pete Urich, and I'm joined by, I'm assuming, Posh fan, although I never really actually ever asked the question, but Owen Howard is here, and he's from Peterborough, but lives in the United States at least part of the time. And as I told him before we started recording, I was going to wait a minute to ask some of the questions about, you know, how come you're here, what have you been doing, and everything like that. I know about a year or so ago when I originally reached out to you, you were doing a few things. You were playing for Delta State, and you were also playing for Corpus Christi, which is a team in the USL. So what are you doing now, and why are you here in the United States? The whole Posh Across the Pond thing really applies to you.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. I know we spoke a while ago, but yeah, things just got hectic, and yeah, here we are today. But so I'm currently in Des Moines, Iowa, at Grandview University. So I graduated from Delta State in, what was it, December 2020. So I was over there. I've been over there for 3 years. Got a soccer scholarship. So long story behind that, but yeah, the fact was I obviously went out there on a soccer scholarship. My first school as a freshman was actually based in Chicago. But after my freshman year, I transferred to Delta State, and that's where I was until I graduated. It was all based on soccer reasons and scholarship and what have you. And then once I graduated from Delta State, I went back home during COVID because it was that COVID time. I was working, still playing, obviously, but working. And then my aunt and uncle actually live here in Des Moines. So they kind of persuaded me to come back out. Originally, I didn't want to come back to school to do my master's, I must admit. But I had 1 year left of eligibility here. And I'm sure you understand about college eligibility and how many years you get and so forth. So I reached out to this one coach who I roughly knew and see if he offered me a good scholarship, and he did. So I thought, why not? I'll come back and play another year and do my master's. So here I am.
Yep. And because of the fact that we're kind of like dipping our toes into both worlds, and I know from our listenership, there's going to be some people who are from the US, some people from the UK. So I'll try and like make sure that everybody understands what we're talking about. So basically, you've played in at the university level for 3 years at Delta State, and then did this final year. When you're in college in the US, you have a certain number of, basically you have 5 years to use four, I think is still the rule. And so basically if you play 4 years within that 5 year span, and COVID kind of missed with that a little bit because of the fact that it allowed for a lot of kids who were playing during that COVID season to get another year in. So it almost ended up being where you could get in 5 years within a 6 year period. So that's basically kind of what happened to you, correct?
Yeah, correct. It was slightly different for me just because I went past that 5 year period. I still have 1 year left, but I went over that 5 year period. So I couldn't join another D1 or D2 school. It had to be an NAIA school. And they allow you to play the 4 years within any unlimited amount of years kind of thing. So luckily for me, the school that was near to where I'm living now was an NAIA, so it allowed me to come back and use that year.
And so you didn't answer the question directly, but are you a Posh fan?
Yeah, I'm a Posh fan. Yeah, started supporting them since I was, what, 5, 6, played for the academy, and yeah, I've had a season ticket when I was younger. And yeah, I struggled since I moved out to America, college reasons. I struggled to watch live games, but, you know, you see it social media and the odd game I'll pay for. And when I'm back home, I'll try and catch a couple of games with my family and friends. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Is it a family thing? Your entire family a Posh family, or is there any kind of a division there where you've got a few Cambridge family members or something?
No, definitely not Cambridge. My granddad's a Posh fan. Dad is. So, yeah, he kind of got me into Posh when I was 5, 6. And, yeah, I got my first season ticket and then went with my grandparents. Obviously, when I was playing for as an academy, even when I got released, I carried on going with my friends. So, yeah, it's always been a family thing, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. And so, you know, the things that I have a tendency to ask, obviously, usually we're talking to Americans who have made a big trip over there. But do you remember your first match at the Posh, or were you too young to have a really good memory of it?
No, I don't remember my first home game. I always get asked this, and I always try and think, and I never can. But I remember going to one of my first away games with my dad, and it was against MK Dons. I couldn't tell you what year it was, but it was when they had the old, like a racetrack stadium kind of thing. It was basically, I remember it was right next to this ice hockey stadium. The away stand was like it was literally like a bleacher out here at college, you know, just a metal bleacher, and we were right at the top, and I remember we were losing. It's freezing cold, but yeah, I remember that. That just envision of being the first away game with my dad. But yeah, home game, I can't actually remember my first home game. I was too young, I think.
Yeah, you got drugged there before you even knew what was going on. I did the same
exactly,
thing because obviously, you know, being from the States, my first Posh game was much later on, but I took my son to his first Red Bulls game. We used to live in New Jersey, so we supported the Red Bulls. And you know, he was probably 2 or 3. And as I'm watching the match, it was when they were still playing at Giant Stadium. He's looking up in the air at the planes, I thought. And so I didn't even think he was paying any attention. But then I realized he said to me, Lacey, like, Dad, they almost scored. And I realized he was watching the game on the Jumbotron rather than I don't know if he realized the game was going on in front of him, but you know, it was good to see him actually paying attention as opposed to I just wasted a whole bunch of money on him going to a game and he has no idea what's going on. But it was definitely good.
Is he still a Red Bulls fan now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we moved to Virginia, so we don't get to see as many games, obviously. But we still pay attention, you know, MLS obviously being the major league in the U.S. And we'll get into your whole thing with the USL a little bit if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, one of my former players plays for Vancouver at the moment, the Whitecaps.
Okay.
So it's another reason to, you know, pay attention and everything like that. So
not brilliant.
So obviously you don't remember your first Posh game, but do you have a favorite Posh moment as a fan?
It's a tough one. There's been a lot.
Your lifetime has been a really good time to be a Posh fan for the most part. I mean, there's a little lull in the middle, but
I do remember who we're playing. I think we're playing Accrington Stanley at home and we beat them 7-0 or 7-1. That was just goals galore, but like I said, I was a young kid. Another one, we were playing Ipswich, and I was with my dad, and my dad's cousin is an Ipswich fan. He went with his wife. He took his wife for the first time to watch an Ipswich game. He was in the away end with her, and it was when they had the terrace for the away end, and we were in the family stand, so we could see them standing watching the game. And I think they went 1-0 up, and you know, he was giving the hand gestures to my dad and whatever. And then we turned it around. I think we ended up winning, I want to say 7-1. And oh, it was just unbelievable because obviously we're quite close with him. And you could just see his face drop after each goal that went in. And then I think we went out for a family meal that night with my sister, mum and his kids and whatever. And yeah, because obviously my dad was just giving him stick all night. But yeah, that game does live in the memory for a family reason, yeah.
That's awesome. Do you have a favorite player? Obviously, I know that from looking at your bio, at least, you were playing as an outside back mainly when you were in Delta State and Corpus Christi. But do you have anybody in particular from the Posh that is your favorite player?
Yeah, I grew up in like the era of like Charlie Lee and Gabby Zakuani. So Charlie Lee always probably hits home, just a fan favorite. You know, he did it so versatile, plays wherever. And yeah, I really did like Charlie Lee, Gabby Zakuani, obviously. And then George Boyd. I mean, who can't like George Boyd? So them yeah. Three. But yeah, Charlie Lee sticks in the mind. Yeah.
Yeah, Charlie Lee is my favorite player of all time as well. It just, yeah. You know, how could you not like the guy? And I think he just retired like last year or something that.
I think he ended up playing up top for Stevenage for a year, and that was weird seeing him do that. But yeah, back in his day, he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and like you said, absolutely versatile player. And, you know, I think at one point, like, he was playing left back, but he started out as a center back. We put him into the defensive mid position. Like, the guy can play anywhere. So it was really cool.
Did you start supporting Peter Roof?
About 2003. Okay. So basically, I got into it kind of a completely backwards way, the FIFA soccer game on the Xbox. And so I ended up, I used to use Liverpool in order to play the game. And then I got bored with winning all the time, because at the time, you know, when I would play it in college and stuff, they had Michael Owen and everything. It was just too easy. So I decided to take a lower level team and bring them up. And since my name's Peter, I chose Peterborough. They were in League Two at the time. And then after doing that for a little bit, I started paying attention, and that was when Guy Branston was with the team on loan and stuff. And
yeah,
and it just, I got really interested in it. And then my first trip was, I think it was 2007. That sounds right. And I went and saw us play against MK Dons at home and won. And it was great, you know, just going to the, I was in the family stand at that point, and just, watching this team that I've been supporting for about 3-4 years at that point. And, you know, it was a real thing at that point. So I really, you know, have been kind of not obsessed. I don't want to put it that at that level. You know, most of my supporting has been through the DARA, time period. So
yeah, 2003, but it would have been the same sort of time I started, because I was 5 then. So yeah.
I was not 5.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. It's quite all right. I work with young people. I teach at a school, and, you know, I've coached at the college level and everything like that. I'm used to being around young people all the time. So no.
Okay.
So anyway, can you kind of like run us through a little bit of the story of like, all right, how does a kid from Peterborough end up in the U.S. playing in college and everything like that? I know that we kind of jumped back and forth a little bit, but, you know, can you fill me in on that story a little bit?
Yeah, so started off, obviously, when I was younger, I was at Posh, but I was a kid. I was like 7 years old. I got released when I was 11. Yeah, because it was just before going into secondary school. So I was about 11, got released. Typical reason of being too small. But I got released and then played for a local team called Yaxley. We were successful at the time. Obviously, you're only young. It's obviously equivalent to club soccer out here. But I was playing good level back home when I was a youngster. But then obviously you get to the point where you're playing under-18s football. You're not getting, seen by any pro clubs or anything like that. And I knew that an option was to come out to America to play college soccer, because I could. It's a bit different. Like, I always tell people here, when you get an education back home in college, if you're playing any athletics, football, whatever it is back home in England, it's like recreational. It's not really taken seriously. You know, you don't get the scholarships that you do out here. It's not full time. So it's either, do I go university back home and kind of knock the football on the head, or do I come out here, which a lot of European kids do, because it's the second best opportunity to play professionally. So there's a company called Sports Recruiting USA, and the basic recruitment agency. So you go and have a trial with them. I was selected. I think there was about 6 or 7 of us out of about 50 that got selected. And then obviously based on that trial selection, you playing a couple not trial games, but showcase games, and they'll video you. They'll basically create a highlight film and send it out to coaches. But you're coming out here as a freshman, you're unknown. So getting offers in your first year is quite hard unless you've come directly from a professional club. And obviously I hadn't. So the best offer I got was a NAIA school in just outside Chicago called Calumet. It was a good scholarship offer, but I knew the school would only be, for me, it would only be good enough for 1 year just because the facilities weren't great and stuff. But like I said, it was a good opportunity to come out here. So yeah, I flew out. That was in 2017, I think. So I was freshman year. Had an okay first year, but it took a bit of adjusting. The season so short. You play so many games in a short amount of time. Obviously, living away from home. Simple things like the possession and the style of play, but in America is so different to back home. It just, everything took a little bit of a transition. Even the referees, I'm not going to sit here and slag off American referees, but there's a big, big difference back home. You know, I think I ended up getting suspended after eight. So I started like the first eight games, and the first eight games, I got 5 yellow cards and suspended. And I mean, my dad might tell you something different, but I can tell you 4 or 5 of those yellow cards were just, in England, there'd never be a yellow card.
Yep.
Anyway, so I got suspended, and the season kind of petered out a bit, and I was like, oh, I don't know what to do because I need a transfer. And yeah, my recruitment agency basically helped me get a good transfer to a D2 school. Like I said, the dream was to go to a D1, but scholarships just weren't coming in. I went to D2 school, and they played in the Gulf Southern Conference, and the conference is, you know, really good. West Alabama, some big schools in there. And I knew it was one of the toughest D2 schools in the country. So I went there, but it was in the middle of nowhere. It was in Cleveland, Mississippi. There's absolutely nothing there. But our facilities were brilliant. University itself was state of the art. And the scholarship was good. And the coach was Scottish. Near enough, everyone on the team was European. I roomed with a Spanish guy. And yeah, I loved it there. Absolutely loved it. I had a great 3 years, and yeah, that kind of took me into the summer football, which I played. But yeah, the whole experience was brilliant. I could go on and on about it, to be fair. So
awesome. So obviously the referees aside, what's the big difference between the playing style of, you know, American versus the English game?
Playing style, obviously, massively is fitness versus physicality. So, you know, back home in England, even when I graduated, I carried on playing non-league back home for Wisbeach Town. And it's an okay level. You get a bit of money, but like I say, it's just non-league. And the physicality is, you know, a step above what it is in America, but it's all pretty one-dimensional, long balls. Go from A to B as quick as you can. But in America, it suits me more because it's possession style. It's full-on fitness. I mean, as a fullback, if I didn't get up and down the pitch a certain amount of times, you know, I'd be off after 60 minutes. They're huge on fitness. They're the toughest pre-seasons I've ever had over here. I'd say fitness is the biggest difference. And style of play. Some say it's slower. It might be, but it's possession style. And it's just totally different. So,
gotcha. Okay. And the USL thing at Corpus Christi, you know, how did that whole entire thing work out? Obviously, you know, that explanation of people dipping their feet into both ponds, but both sides of the pond, but MLS is the top league in the US, which is, you know, a closed system. Nobody can get promoted or relegated into or out of MLS. But underneath that, the second, third, and fourth tier are all under the cap of the USL, which is the leagues are actually called the Championship League One and League Two.
Yeah.
And so there is kind of a promotion relegation thing, but at the same time, it's a little bit more squirrely than I think that the purists would really like it to be. Cause there are certain teams who have, I know, like right in our area, Richmond Kickers, they had to move down to League Two for a year, I think, just for financial reasons. It wasn't like they got relegated. They just didn't have the finances in order to stay in the top division and everything like that. So anyway, How did the whole Corpus Christi thing come about for you?
Yeah, like you said, you explained it pretty well. So if when you're in college, obviously the season's really short. You basically have August to December is the college season, and then January to May, obviously they're the two semesters. January to May is the off season, but in the summer months of May to end of July, August, they have USL 2. So as a college athlete, you're allowed to play semi-professionally. So you can't play USL 1 or USL Championship, but you can play USL 2 or NPSL, which is the equivalent. So when I was in Delta State my first year, I played for Michigan Stars in the NPSL. So we played, you know, teams like Detroit City. And I mean, that was unbelievable. I remember they got 6,990 fans for our game, Michigan versus Detroit. And you're thinking that's just semi-professional. I mean, unbelievable. So that whole summer was brilliant. Traveling all across, you know, America or the Midwest. Yeah, that's brilliant. But anyway, I did that for that year. And then the year after that, I wanted to go USL 2. Again, it was just a matter of America. You reach out, you know, built up a bit of history of playing NPSL, and they love stats out here and stuff like that, film. Yeah, spoke to a few coaches, and yeah, ended up signing for Corpus Christi. The only trouble was it took me, because the year before that I signed for another team in Texas called BV Cavalry. They're also USO 2. And literally the week before I was going to go out there, COVID hit, so the season got cancelled. So Corpus Christi came. The only trouble was it came at a time when we literally just got out of lockdown. So I was back in England, but even back home, there was no games going on. So it was only training. So where kids over in America, they were playing a bit earlier and they were a bit fresher. So I still went out there and got signed, but it was a bit of a season where, yeah, I enjoyed the experience, but football-wise didn't work out just because I hadn't been playing for the last, you know, 12 months at a competitive level. So that was a bit of annoying, because if it came the year before, it would have been perfect. But yeah, I played. It was a great experience, but I'd say playing for Michigan Stars was, yeah, that stands out. And yeah, hopefully this summer I get to play NPSL or USL 2 again. So, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Awesome. Just out of your travels, do you have like a favorite city that you visited? Obviously, you're living in Des Moines right now, and you were in Cleveland, which I'm sure is probably not the best place in America, but I'm sure that it's got its positives. But do you have a favorite city that you've traveled to through your time here in the US?
Yeah, so obviously playing in college, the amount of traveling you do is unbelievable. You go from city to city, but I'd say Chicago stands out to me. I love it. Whether it's a weekend or whatever, yeah, Chicago to me is brilliant. It's expensive, but like I say, I love it out there, and all the sports teams that are there as well. So yeah, Chicago.
Yeah, Chicago's amazing, except for in like January or yeah, whatever. Sorry. You go there at the wrong time of the year. It's just because obviously I'm a soccer coach. I've coached at the D3 level in college and things like that. But
yeah.
You know, every year they have the National Soccer Coaches Convention, and a few years back it was in Chicago, like in January, and it's just absolutely freezing.
Oh, it's so cold. I mean, I'm more of luckily my family, they have they like snowbirds, so they have a house in Florida. That's where they are at the minute. But once I graduated, I had the opportunity to work in Sarasota for a few months. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that was beautiful. Sun every day. They're not a massive sports team in Sarasota, but you know, you got the Tampa Bay Rowdies around there and the baseball around there. But yeah, if I could live in Florida tomorrow, I would.
Yeah.
So, just love the heat.
That's awesome. So obviously we went through the college stuff and the USL things and stuff like that. Have you been watching Posh recently, or are you not able to get it because you don't have Posh Plus at the moment?
Well, I just came home from Christmas break back home in England. So I went to watch the Barnsley game with a couple of friends on that Friday night. And then me and my dad went to watch, me, dad, and one of his mates went to watch the Leeds game in the FA Cup. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Derby was on TV as well. So,
gotcha. Yeah. And so what do you think of the team recently? You know, how are you feeling about our chances for possible promotion, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, when I first saw them against Barnsley, because obviously out here, I didn't really pay for any games. I know you got the eye follow on that, but it was just what I saw on social media. But obviously, I left in August and I saw during pre-season, we looked a bit, I don't know. My friends were saying, oh, I'm not sure we'll get promoted this year. It'll probably be a year where we just end up getting mid-table. And then when I saw them at Barnsley, they didn't look great, but I thought, oh, there's something here. And then the Leeds game turned up and yeah, they just, I don't know, you could tell the quality between us. And I thought, yeah, we do have some good players, but I'm not sure how good we are. And then watching us against Derby, yeah, that just blew me away. I'm surprised how good we are. I think going back to the George Boyd days, this is probably one of the most exciting teams we've had. It's young, hungry. Just a shame we lost Chiosa. I thought he was brilliant at right back.
Yeah.
I think we've got a really good chance going up, and I'm really surprised, actually.
Yeah, he was a great outside back to have, and he was, even though he's only 24, he was like the leader of the team.
Yeah, I thought it was a weird decision to make him captain, I must admit, but you could tell he was a leader, and yeah, he defended well, got forward, and I think we're, even though Katongo's there at the minute, I think we might miss him a little bit, but I'll have to see how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, obviously, we're in the, I don't want to say middle, we're almost at the very end of transfer window. It doesn't look like anybody's moving, but, any thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I was worried that we'd lose Ronnie Edwards, I must admit, because you don't want to lose Ronnie Edwards and Chiosa in the same window. But I listened to D-Mat's podcast the other day, and I think he was saying, if anyone's going to take Ronnie, he's going to come back on loan anyway, so I'm not really worried that we'll lose him. But I think financial-wise, it would be great if we did sell him and then got a fee for him and then got him back for the rest of the window, season, sorry. I thought we could maybe lose Poku or Mason Clark if a bid came in for them. But no, I mean, fingers crossed we'll keep him. The only thing I think we need is a striker. But I've seen a few people say that on Twitter and
I'm one of the people who says that we don't need a striker. I'm going in the opposite direction.
We could easily play Mason Clark up there. So,
yeah,
I just don't know if there's enough goals in Ricky J. Jones to get promoted. But
again, you're a young player, so you know you're what 23,
25,
now? 25. All right, so you know, even by your standard, you know, you would be an old man on the present Posh team. To a certain extent. And I know that Ricky J. Jones has a tendency to frustrate some people because it seems like he's been around forever. But the thing is he's never gotten a long string of goal or string of games as a striker. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that he's never gotten that chance to actually prove himself 100%. And I think that that's what this season was always supposed to be about, is the young players, regardless of whether they are not hitting the mark, they're going to keep on playing them. Like, you know, Joel Randle is the one who has, you know, started to come good, I think, this season and everything. And I know that people get frustrated by Ricky because he misses chances, but it's only in that game situation where he gets the chance to actually put the ball on net. And if we drop him every time that he misses, he's never going to learn how to, you know, calm himself, put himself in the right position and then put the ball in. And so I'm a huge fan of what we're doing. I'm not saying it's going to work. And you just mentioned like the whole, this feels more like the Craig McHale Smith and everything like that. You wouldn't remember because you were just a kid, but everybody was complaining, you know, McLean and Craig McHale Smith can't play together. They're too similar.
No, I remember that. Yeah.
But we saw what happened. So, you know, Darren Ferguson's been around long enough. He can figure this out. And if he drops Ricky J. Jones, I don't have a problem with it, but us as fans just saying we need a new striker in just because, well, that just doesn't make sense to me when the guy who sees him every day and is knows the project that we're doing, that's where, you know, I'm like, I don't know that we need a striker in because people want a striker who is reliable or whatever, you know, is a proven striker. Well, those cost a lot of money that we don't have. And we already have a two-time Golden Boot winner sitting on the bench who we're choosing not to play.
But yeah, I think that's the big issue. I think if we manage to get rid of John Scarcaris for a fee, we might, you know, we'll have some available funds. But yeah, we clearly don't have the money right now to buy a striker. And do we need one? Probably not. But I remember McHale Smith needed 10 one-on-ones to score one goal when he was first coming through. Do I see that ability in Ricky J. Jones, if I'm honest? No, but he's got raw pace. If he's got nothing else, he's got raw pace. And, yeah, it scares defenders. I mean, you saw it against Derby, it scares defenders. I've seen Fergie say it before. I think Mason Clark playing centrally could be an option come the end of the season. But again, who have you got on the left? You could play Ajiboy and what's his name? Malik Somerville, whatever his name is.
Mothersfield.
Yeah. He could be an option. But yeah, I think there's goals in the team. I'd keep playing Ricky J. Jones. Don't get me wrong. I just don't know how many goals he'll score. But yeah.
Well, we're leading the league in goals at the moment.
Yeah, I know. You can't complain.
But that's my whole point. It's like we're complaining about not having enough goals, but we lead the league in goals.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. Yeah.
So,
yeah. I think there's enough goals in the team. That's for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee, and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Your entire life has been the DMACC era for the most part. Thoughts on the owner that you're willing to put out into public?
Oh, I don't have a bad word to say about Dan McCartney, if I'm honest. I know people differ, and you see it on social media, and some of my friends, they say bad words about him or whatever, but... Now, since I saw it just before he came in, how posh were and like Barry Fry in charge, and no disrespect to Barry Fry, but the club was an absolute mess. And then obviously he took over and completely changed it. I mean, going that Friday night against Barnsley when I was home for Christmas, I mean, it was a night game, everything was nice at night, but the stadium looks brilliant. I know the pitch probably needs a bit of an upgrade itself, but the actual stadium looked brilliant. And I remember back in the day, the stadium was just a mess. Yeah, we're in League One again, and people say that's where we were 10 years ago or whatever. But, I mean, we're always going to be a yo-yo club anyway, Championship and League One. So I don't think fans moaning about where we are at the minute. I mean, you see clubs like Leyton Orient, who we always used to compete with. Now they're in, they're back up in the Football League, but they're in National League not long ago. And you see how quickly teams fall. I don't think he earns a lot of money. Dan McAntony, you can look at the financials, and I don't think we earn huge amounts of profits, even though the players were sold. I think he reinvested it one way or another. I don't have a bad word to say about him. I know he's very, he's a hothead and he says this and that, but no, I wouldn't have it any other way, if I'm honest.
Yeah, and same thing for me. I saw the period right before he took over, and I forget what the, obviously Mark Tyler was the goalkeeper at the time and everything like that. But I think Mark had actually left really briefly, but we didn't even have a backup goalkeeper. And so when Mark Wright came in as the manager, he was like the first manager to have a backup goalkeeper. Cause I always forget whether it was Richard Logan or whether it was Dean Holden who had to play goalkeeper because our goalkeeper had gotten a red card one game. And it's like, all right, we don't even have a backup goalkeeper. Yeah. it's come on leaps and bounds, but those people who are either A, have never experienced it because of the fact that they weren't around at that point, or B, just, want to complain about just about anything for the 100%. Most part, but knowing what the club was before he got here is you can see that it's a totally different animal as opposed to, the first year I paid attention where Guy Branson was on loan, we were fighting relegation from League Two.
Yeah.
We barely stayed up. So it was, that was the precursor to everything that we've seen at this point. Dara has taken over, and those first couple seasons where we got the back-to-back promotions and everything were amazing. And I think that's probably the only thing that, you keep on looking at what we're doing now. And it's like looking back at that time where we had the Charlie Lees and all of those types of players. It's like, this looks a lot more like that than we have in recent years.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The days before DMACC came in, the club was just an absolute mess. Even the academy was terrible. I can't remember, what was the TV show that there was a documentary
on? Big Ron Manager.
Yeah, that's it. It's just absolutely terrible. I mean, my dad, yeah, he knows them days inside out. But like you got the likes of Danny Crowe in there, and it was terrible, absolutely terrible. And I mean, there's also almost a point. I think Barry Fry's come out and say it, where the club nearly just had to, you know, liquidate. I mean, there was no way forward. So I mean, Darrow to come in and save our club and, you know, say what you want, but that's what he did. Yep. And yeah, we're a League One club, but well, we're second in the league right now. We look entertaining every time we're in League One. The ground's improving, the academy's improving. I think it's just generational. I mean, it's not just young fans. You've even got older people looking at the likes of Bournemouth saying, why can't we do that? But for every Bournemouth, there's a Leighton Orient or a Bury, you know? So yep. I think we just have to accept that, you know, we haven't got rich American or Saudi owners that are going to invest £50 million a player in League One or Championship. It ain't going to happen. But we're going to do it, obviously, buying young players. And that's what we're doing again. And you never know. One day we might become a mid-table Championship team. And yeah, you take that and I'll take it.
I absolutely would take that. And I'm still a believer that it can happen. And if you take a look at, you know, a team who is obviously on the rise for a very specific reason, Wrexham, back when, you know, you and I were starting paying attention, Wrexham were either in League One or League Two. They were, you know, in our league. Darren Ferguson came from Wrexham to start managing for us. And the only reason he came to us is because they didn't want to hire him as for his first managerial job. So, you know, seeing what that club has gone through for the past, you know, however many years. And then finally, now they've got their Cinderella story of, you know, the Hollywood actors coming in and saving their club to a certain extent. It's great. That story is great, but they had to go through a hell of a lot of trouble in order to get there. I think I would much rather have kind of stayed where we are, where, you know, we're in League One, we're in the Championship, and we kind of yo-yo a little bit, but I still am a big believer that we have the ability to at some point become a viable Championship club, you know.
No, I do. I think there's teams in the Championship now which they don't all have 20,000 seat stadiums or whatever. You know, there are smaller teams in that Championship which I believe we can compete. I mean, like I said, look at Bournemouth. I think their stadium capacity is no more than 15,000 and they're
Luton.
Yeah, Luton Town. And there is clubs in the Championship. I can't think of the top of my head, but I'm trying to think somewhere. Well, Rotherham, the likes of Rotherham. There's no reason why we can't do what Rotherham are doing. And I think the club's on the up. And like I said, I wouldn't have D-Mac any other way. I would love it though if we had a Disney documentary or an Amazon documentary or something like that.
Yeah, that would be a fun little thing to do is see where we've come. If you were able to, you know, almost splice footage together from the Big Ron manager versus where we are now.
But you think obviously Darren Ferguson, the son of Alex, and Darren McCantney, how hot-headed he is. You think that'd be entertaining for the global audience. So you never know one day, but I think that'd be brilliant.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, you've got your foot in the United States and in England a little bit. You know, do you have any suggestions for building the fan base over here? Is that even a possibility in your eyes?
Yeah, you watch the Wrexham fan and you talk to people like, I mean, a lot of people that I go to class with, obviously they're Americans, but most people in the soccer team over here, they're Europeans, but they'll all mention, you know, the likes of Wrexham and that. And before they never even heard of Wrexham, I know they hadn't. So you'd think that it'd have to be something like, something on the media that would try and attract fans, soccer fans out here to become posh fans, because creating a larger fan base just off the likes of iFollow will be difficult. Because even, you know, I'm a posh fan, even I struggle to watch the games live. So I'd say it'd have to be some sort of Netflix, Amazon, Disney, some sort of documentary that kind of brings fans to Peterborough. So it is difficult. I don't know if you've met many others that are American. Posh fans.
There's a handful here and there, and you know, for the most part, we've all come into, you know, being posh fans for weird reasons. Usually, study abroad in England or something along those lines. I've been you know, I've written letters to Dara since you were a young a young kid about like having a U.S. tour, and I think they were going to do it, but I think it was the COVID season where they were planning on coming and playing a couple USL teams and stuff like that, but it just never came off. And I think that would be a really great way to do it if you, you know, go and play a few USL teams, but also run clinics for young kids and stuff. If you get a young kid to say, oh, this is a professional player from England, they, I'm sure, know the Premier League and everything like that. But, you know, with that personal, personal connection of, oh, well, you know, this is whomever, Ronnie Edwards, he plays for England now, and he played for Peterborough United, and that's now the team that I pay the most attention to. I think that would be probably the best way to go about it. But again, it's, you know, the Disney Disney Plus would be an amazing thing for me to watch as well. So I watch the games regardless.
Yeah, exactly. But I think now is the time to kind of hit the likes of America, because even since I came in 2017, the progression in United States for soccer has been unbelievable. I mean, facilities have been, especially like an area like Des Moines, it's a small city, but it's brand new, and they're building soccer facilities everywhere. I mean, people are watching it on TV now. I know mostly the Premier League, but they're showing it on TV. People are into it. ESPN Plus are showing, you know, Championship, League One, League Two games, FA Cup. But people really are talking about soccer now, and it wasn't the case in 2017 as much as it is now. So I think, like you said, the likes of playing USL clubs and getting the clinics, that'd definitely be a way forward. And just quickly on the clinics, I mean, I know out here the academy football is, I can't believe it that kids out here that play academies, it's all about finances. I mean, they're paying to be part of an academy, where obviously the structure in back in England is you're good enough to play, you know. So like when I was at Peterborough, I went for a trial, I think I was 7 years old, and you're selected based off your abilities, nothing to do with money. Out here is different. So if you get the likes of Peterborough to play USL clubs, you know, an MLS team, and then based a clinic off that, where, you know, anyone had the opportunity to join those clinics, if they're good enough, they get selected. I think that's definitely something that we as the, you know, the British could probably target, because I reckon there's a lot of talent out here that no one's looked at.
Yeah, there's definitely that financial concept of, you know, pay to play is a huge, I think it's a huge deterrent to the growth of the game. You know, the two things that I would change if I was in charge of U.S. soccer would be, one, promotion relegation. You know, I we would have a pyramid, and then two is only have academies that are based out of, you know, professional teams. You have to have a professional team in order to call yourself an air quotes academy, because there's a lot of people who are just doing the money grab of, I can charge you $3,000 a year to have your kid play, and they're never going to go to college and play. They're never going to do anything with their soccer career other than be able to say, I was part of this academy for 2-3 years or whatever. And, you know, the player that I mentioned earlier, Brian White, he went the university route. He played at a high level academy in New Jersey, but then went to Duke and played there for 4 years, and then went into the draft and everything. But that idea of developing talent rather than, you know, making money off of the talent or the lack thereof is more of what we need to figure it out. The cream of the crop, the top of the level, the top of, you know, any age group or anything really needs to be in a different section. Everything else is basically recreation.
100%. And like I said, there's definitely a gap out here in the market, because even those semi-professional games I was playing out here in NPSL and USL2, there was, you know, hundreds of fans watching, and that's just for semi-professional. I mean, even non-league back home in England, semi-professional, you don't get hundreds of fans watching some of them levels. So there's definitely a gap here. It's just targeting it in the right way. So
yeah, no doubt about it. So I apologize for jumping backwards here, but, you know, what are you studying now for your master's?
Sports management. Yeah, sports management. So, when I first graduated in 2020, I did have a plan of another recruitment agency that was going to help me go to Scandinavia to play for a couple of years professionally. Money obviously wouldn't have been great, but it was just a kind of a personal thing, just so I could play professionally and do that for a couple of years before, you know, getting a career and focusing on a career. But obviously I'm a bit older now and times have changed, so still want to keep playing, but I think the aim is to try and join a professional soccer team, a football team, and, you know, whether it's recruitment or in the marketing side of things. But yeah, I think, don't worry, I love it out here. I think I definitely have something to offer professional clubs out here. But yeah, whether I stay out here or go back home in England, definitely working in some sort of a sports club would be the aim. So
awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, we need a left back at the moment to back up Ronnie, or not, yeah, Harrison Burroughs, or you know, working with Phil Adlam in the media department.
Well, I think that's another thing. I think there's more money out here working in America in a sports club than there is back home. I mean, I think I was even looking at jobs back home, and I don't know why, but the salary double out here to work at a professional sports club and like recruitment and that. So
Yeah,
like I said, the money's here. It's just trying to get the fans out of here. But it's a different conversation, I guess.
Yeah, well, to a certain extent, you know, you'll find your way, I'm sure. The path isn't always apparent until you get there. So, you know, you'll figure it out. But I thank you so much for having the conversation. You know, is there anything else you want to add by before we sign off here?
No, not at all. Thanks for having me, Pete, and apologize it's taken so long for me to go on.
Oh, no worries. This was great. You know, it was a long time coming, but at the same time, totally worth it. I think that you have a really great perspective as opposed to, you know, on either side of things. It's, you know, the American fans who are looking at things from their side, and then the English fans who are going to hear this, you know, what it's like to be here in the United States as a English, I'm going to call you a kid. I know you're 25, but compared to me, you're a kid. you know, that perspective of like seeing the English game when you're a young person and then coming over here and playing and everything like that. It's, you know, I get chided from time to time about like my optimism, because I am an American. I tend to be optimistic and everything, and I've said several times that, you know, the U.S. is going to win the World Cup in 2026. I know that there's nobody that believes me, but you know, the home field advantage can't be denied. That's the only time that England won their World Cup, so
it wouldn't surprise me one day. I'm not 2026 might not be it, but it wouldn't surprise me one day.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We've got it in us eventually. Just it's going to take some time, and like you've said, you know, the sport is got a much bigger foothold than it used to. And, you know, it's funny to hear you saying that, like, since 2017 that things have changed. I've been paying attention to soccer, obviously, all my life, but like 1994, where the World Cup was here the first time, that's where things started to take off. You know, up until that point, it was hard, other than the World Cup, to watch soccer on TV. But now every single weekend there's, you know, premiership games, or you know, you can watch just about any league that you want. So it's beautiful to see all of that as a longtime soccer fan / football fan.
Even college soccer, I mean, the way that's improved, that we don't have it back in Europe, especially in England. And like I said, that's why most teams I've been on, they're full of Europeans. Don't worry, I know the level out here. College soccer is not professional. I'm not naive enough to say the level is professional, but the coaches out here do train you like you're professional, so you earn your scholarship, you know. So we'd have days where it's double training Monday to Friday, and then the games on a Sunday, and you're traveling, and like I said, you're in the gym in the morning, you're training in the afternoon, and you feel like a professional. You're getting your scholarship and you're getting your education, and like I said, that's why every team I've been out here, all the players are European. There is obviously Americans in, and there's good talent here, don't get me wrong, but I'd highly recommend anyone to come out here for college soccer. And with the facilities they've got out here, it wouldn't surprise me if one day America does win the World Cup, that's for sure.
All right, I'm just going to cut out that piece of what you just said, and everything else we're going to get rid of. No, I'm just kidding. No, but thank you so much, Owen. This was really great. I really appreciate you coming on.
Lovely. Cheers, Pete.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Posh Across the Pond. Thanks to Owen for joining us. If you're a Posh fan abroad, we'd love to hear from you. Visit our website to get in touch. Follow us on the socials or visit our website, www.theyellowblock.co.uk. Up the Posh.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.